back to the Ink Sink. I am Annie. Don't touch that dial. Kaylee will be on in just a second. You are listening to our second holiday replay episode while we are on break, figuring out our unfortunate technical issues. We really appreciate all of you bearing with us, and thank you for your patience as we handle all of this. In addition to scheduling conflicts, we have had every equipment failure known to man in the past couple months. So thank you again. We really appreciate it. And in payment for all of that patience, we are giving you one of our favorite episodes today. This is our Trope Fest, part two of our Trope Fest, where we are covering some of the biggest tropes out there, and we're gonna let you learn about it right now. Welcome back to the Ink Sink. I am Annie.
I'm Kaylee.
Celebrating readers, leaders, and word nerds, this is the publishing podcast for the rest of us.
Yeah!
Yeah! Thank you. I appreciate your support.
I will hype you until the end of the line, Annie.
Thank you. For better or worse.
For better and worse. I'm ride or die.
That's right. Specifically, probably die. With how I drive.
Probably worse, but maybe better.
Listen, we are infinitely optimistic. Here at the Ink Sink, we believe that maybe one day we won't die in a car crash.
It's true.
How you doing, Kaylee?
It's been 2 years since we started this year.
It feels like it's been two years since we started this recording.
Yeah, also, specifically. Yeah, I feel like the 30 Rock meme for sure. Like, it's been a heck of a week. It's Tuesday.
Lemon, it's Tuesday.
How about you, Annie?
I'm good. You know, grad school sucks. Having two jobs sucks. Having a podcast is wonderful. But there's work involved with that, too.
I think you're doing great.
Oh, thank you.
All of the editing is wonderful in the new episodes, and you're a rock star.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Only 6 more months of grad school to go, so I think it's 5 and a half, actually. So,
that's right.
Hoo-wee. Ready for that. Hopefully.
As somebody
that knew
I was too lazy to go back to grad school. Hats off. I mean, I would do it. I would just hate it.
I think I have midterms coming up soon. We're recording this in mid-February. Or late February. I have midterms coming up. And then after that, I think I only have 3 classes left.
Nice.
And then I will take maybe the world's longest nap. And then I might play some video games.
You can come over to my house and you can each nap with Widge.
Oh my god. Kaylee just offered me her cat.
She's an excellent napper. And she likes you. You fed her.
I did. I fed her. While Kaylee and her person were off on a trip, I went over to the house with my husband and we fed the cat. And
took adorable photos for us.
Took adorable photos and sent them along, and maybe possibly selfishly wished that their flight would get delayed so that we could stay a little longer.
I get it. My cat is genuinely the cutest creature that has ever existed.
Kaylee had a little bag of cuties, like oranges. What are they? They're tangerines.
They're like clementines. They're like a crossbreed, yeah.
An orange citrus fruit. Cuties. Called Cuties. And while we were over there, we cut off the Cuties label and just held it above Widge's head and did a whole photo shoot.
It was a model session.
Meantime, I made sure to send both of you different pictures so that you could show them to each other, because I know you love to do that.
I specifically was like, Annie has our back. Just wait.
Widge, for those of you who are new to our podcast, Kaylee's cat Widge looks like just imagine an anime cat. And that's Widge. She's brown with stripes.
Real world.
Her head is a sphere with little ears on it, and then just like the biggest eyes known to mankind, right on her little sphere head. And then she has these little cotton ball feet that are so fluffy.
They're just the chubbiest, softest paws, and they're white. Like, she has little white socks on. She's
white.
A tabby cat. Yeah. But she had little white footy socks on, and it's like all over her paw.
It's insane.
Oh, she's so
cute. She's lost a little bit of weight, so she's lost some of the like specifically rotundness, but she still looks like an anime cat. She just looks like a slightly skinnier anime
She's cat. You know, for her health, she's gotta
she had to slim down a little
bit. Encouraged, because she's an older lady when we adopted her.
Anyway, we love cats on the InkSync. If you have pictures of your cats that you would like to share,
pictures of your cat,
InkSyncPodcast@gmail.com.
we would love to see them. Look at your cats.
We would be so happy if you could send us pictures of your for anyone who owns Roscoe, if you could send us more pictures of Roscoe as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Roscoe.
We only got one person who sent us pictures of their pets last time we called for it, and that was Roscoe. And you know what?
We like.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
We appreciate it. And feel free to keep them coming.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Kaylee. Let's jump in. We're talking about tropes today.
Yes, we are.
Have started a series where we just run through tropes, what they are, what they mean, good examples, bad examples, because we think that tropes are super important and wonderful, and they're just fun to talk about.
They're just fun.
You can go back. I'll link it in our last one. We talked about, what was it? It was the three witches. We talked about the chosen one. And didn't we talk about one more? Okay, so it was three witches and the chosen one, and I'll link that in our show notes. That was a fun one. We got a lot of feedback.
We did.
People disagreeing, people supporting. There was a lot of back and forth about what counts as a chosen one and what counts as a protagonist.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. It was fun. Those discussions.
So we're doing it again today. We're going to have some fun today. Kaylee, you are covering what?
I am covering your favorite. This is so funny.
My favorite
trope. We took each other's favorite topics, I feel like, or at least maybe not my favorite, but. So I'm covering Enemies to Lovers, which is Annie's number one, like her favorite play is Enemies to Lovers.
My favorite play is Enemies to Lovers, and I love a good, like, well done Enemies to Lovers story. They have to actually be enemies and then become lovers in a non-problematic way, which is difficult to do. And when it's well done, it's. Oh, chef's kiss. It's gorgeous.
Because there's nothing, like, if you think about it in stories and in things that you read, things that you watch, there's nothing more satisfying than somebody that you've fought with, like, your whole life. And we were kind of talking about this with the Gideon, the Locked Tomb series, Gideon and Hera. They fought for their whole lives. And then they faced against other people, and they knew exactly where...
each other's strengths and weaknesses, and they were perfect together.
And it's just
like, that was Enemies to Friends, by the way, for those who haven't read that series. It was not Enemies to Lovers.
Not Enemies to Lovers, but it's just that moment, that emotional connection.
Yeah,
where it's
very
satisfying. It's always been you v them, and then suddenly it's us versus the world, and it's there's just something that really clicks.
It's very, very satisfying. Agreed.
So yeah, and then you are doing...
I am doing The Mary Sue, which is one of the longer TV tropes entries that I've ever read. Like, normally they're pretty in-depth, but this one was pages and pages and pages.
There was a
lot of research on that one. My notes are like 5 pages long. You guys can't see this, but I write handwritten notes, and they're very, very long on this one. I'm going to be flipping the pages a lot. You'll hear that. Sorry, everybody.
No, that's a good, that's our Foley for this episode.
That's right.
To be fair, I forgot how this worked, and I started doing research on Mary Sue, and Annie was like, Kaylee, are you ever going to tell me your topic? And I was like, son of a bee, you're right. And then I went and picked a good one, but that would be fun to talk about. So I also have like research on those too. So it'll be
sorry.
Fun. No, I'm just an idiot.
No, it's fine. You're fine. Let's do this.
It's all good. So Enemies to Lovers, like what is that? Like, if you haven't actually seen that, or even if you have, like, I want to kind of maybe formalize like my personal definition. So let's kind of break that down a little bit, and then we can talk about
going on an adventure
more info there. So just at a very high level, obviously
cue the Leonardo DiCaprio jauntily walking down the wall. Sorry, go ahead.
That meme.
Going on an adventure.
Yeah. So when two characters start out as enemies in the context of the story, and then during the story, their relationship is developed in such a way that they take a romantic turn together. Okay, perfect. So the setting of the story itself is also important because, again, as I said, the characters have to start as enemies. And so the nature of the enmity really does hinge on the kind of story that you're being told. Because, and we were talking a little bit about how this particular trope can be problematic.
And I will say sometimes one of the main things, for those of you who are perhaps like me or even more, go through phases where you read a lot of romance novels, a lot of times it'll say enemies to lovers. And it won't be actually enemies. It'll just be people who don't know each other.
Or people who don't kind of mildly irritate each other.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, yeah. That's one of the problems with enemies to lovers. But another one is, yeah, that it can be very problematic.
So the examples, and some of the most famous examples, are genres in which you can have somebody that is considered antagonistic to you, but in such a fashion where it's not a war crime.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get into the specifics. There are several in the last very popular, or at least infamous, like, ships in media.
And for those of you who aren't big media watchers as we are, ship just means relationship, romantic, usually in a piece of media. So like the two main characters getting together, that's a ship.
So I'm going to talk about examples of this and break down like the trope a little more. But it can be problematic depending on the nature of the setting and what constitutes as an enemy for you in that setting. So that is certainly something to consider and to keep in mind when you're looking up media things to read, something like that. When you're looking up these like examples of these stories, like, they're everywhere, but, you know, curate your own experience, kind of make sure that you're not finding something that will make you feel bad. There are very well done ones where people grow and develop themselves and deserve a happy ending at the end, like, it narratively have earned that happy ending. There are other ones where you're gonna be left scratching your head and wondering how we got here in any way that wasn't just because the studio said this is where we needed to end up, basically. So setting all of that to the side, I did also want to kind of give a nod to adjacent or related tropes that aren't enemies to lovers. So Annie kind of mentioned one, which is enemies to friends. But we also have friends to lovers and rivals to lovers, which are similar, but not this trope.
I appreciate that you're making the distinction between rivals to lovers and enemies to lovers, because I think that a lot of times that's like people don't do that. And it's really true. Like, if you have the same goal and you just happen to be like adjacent and you just happen to want the same goal,
You're not an enemy.
I agree with you. It's I would say a subset for sure, but it's still very different. There are different notes that you hit there.
And there's also just you need to watch for different things.
Yes, agreed.
So when did it first come up? So here is a non-problematic potential example, and only because it's super duper old and we only have fragments and relationships at the time were not necessarily conceptualized in quite the same way or spoken of in the same way that we conceptualize and speak of modern relationships.
There's a lot of setup to this one, Kaylee. What are you about to say?
Arguably, the first canonical example of this trope could be the academic circles recognize currently as the oldest example of recorded literature, the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Interesting. Okay.
So, so Gilgamesh and Enkidu,
I was about to say, Gilgamesh and Enkidu.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so Enkidu was created,
they were enemies,
specifically,
yeah,
to be Gilgamesh's foil, and they mm-hmm. just wrestle it out and then decide they're bros, or maybe something more. Like, the language in the scraps that we have,
sure,
is ambiguous for us, and of course we don't know.
Right.
So
I don't speak Sumerian. I don't know about you.
Yeah. So, like, so setting all of that to the side, it's a potential example.
Interesting.
One
okay.
of the potentially oldest pieces of recorded literature. Anyway, so I like that. I thought that was pretty
cool.
That's
a nice little like trivia tidbit, sure.
Yeah. And I'll send you a link. So history.com has just a discussion on the oldest literature, and it kind of breaks down like what the story is. So I'll be happy to send that out just for people that just want a little context.
Yeah, we'll add our sources into the show notes for sure.
And so why do people like it? Like, why do people like, if, especially if, you know, that's accurate, you know, that's like the first or the oldest thing that we have and we've managed to keep it for this long. Like, what draws us in about it? So like, it's obviously fun, and the idea of it is uncomplicated on the surface.
Sure. Opposites attract.
Yeah, exactly. Opposites attract. You have somebody that sparks passion. And the opposite of love is not hatred, it is indifference. Hatred is a separate sort of passion, and you invest time and emotion and mental energy into this other person. And and many in most forms of the media, your physicality is engaged, etc. So, like, you go ham. And ultimately, like we were talking about, especially in the more, I guess, appropriately or well-developed media stories, the people grow and they learn and evolve. Like, characters evolve together and find that typically they're sharing common ground that they didn't necessarily fully realize. Like, Sally, you've got mail. That was an enemies to lovers.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's the trope is around. It's everywhere. But, like, so I didn't want to get into, like, some of that specific example, but it's just something that you kind of have to, like, see. Like, it is everywhere, and you find frequently that the person that you were thinking about in one context is actually, like, that's just one avenue, and they have so many other things, and if you connect to them appropriately, like, as a person, mm-hmm. like, you reach out to them thoughtfully, then there's so much more. And that's when you start to understand them and appreciate them and potentially move forward with them in life. That's one of the, I think, or at least that's, I think, the biggest, like, draw is finding and growing with somebody that you know can, like, not only, like, hold their own against you, but then can turn and protect your back against the world.
Yeah.
So I think that's so interesting. So we're going to start with an honorable mention for a few examples of things that I think aren't actually enemies to lovers, but have been called out. So I think that actually Han and Leia have been called out for this. And I don't think that they're enemies to lovers because they mildly irritate each other. But at no point in the context of the story are they set up as enemies.
Yeah, they're never working against each other.
They're always on the side of the rebellion.
They're even pranking each other.
No. Except for sometimes they insult each other.
Yeah.
That's the most you're going to get out of that.
Right.
So I think that people like, oh, enemies to lovers. No, I mean, like, it's snarky. That's like bantering to lovers. Like, that's not that's not necessarily the case. So that's like
That's acquaintances to lovers if we're
for sure.
We have to do one if we have to do anything.
Exactly. So, like, just giving you guys context for what the difference is for some of the later actual examples. So for things that you'll see this a lot in any classic lists of enemies to lovers, we've got two biggies, which is Much Ado About Nothing, which is Annie's favorite Shakespeare play. And in this one is one of my favorite iterations, the other example, which is Pride and Prejudice.
Which is another one of my favorites.
Which is another one. And I think the reason that these two are so enduring is because of, again, the context that the characters are placed in. They do have genuine problems that they are dealing with, but they are society problems that are not necessarily that are framing each other to, you know, putting each other at a, you know, opposed. Whereas War Crimes is the alternative potentially. So that's, I think, why these particular stories have not only endured in general, but also specifically as the most beloved iterations of this trope. You've got two characters who are placed at opposing angles due to society, but then also potentially their own personal ignorance. They're very clever.
Their pride, very smart. Perhaps. Oh, or their prejudice.
And their internal prejudices.
There is much ado. In fact, they discover about nothing.
It's true. It's true. Sorry. I think that's you're funny. No, you're fine. So for Benedict and Beatrice, for example, in Much Ado About Nothing, there's no harm that their enmity brings to them.
No, but they are pranking each other. They are working against each other in some ways. In the masquerade ball, she is pranking him and he is trying to prank her. He's failing, but he is attempting.
Sure. What I was saying is that they're not, like, the fact that they are enemies is set in a context to where it's just they're getting one up on each other. But they do not personally suffer due to that plot, to that subplot
their
differences. They're established to be good and upright and noble people that just
don't like each other.
Rub each other the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. And everybody knows they hate each other and everyone tries to avoid them when they're together. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. One of the very popular plays.
Yeah.
Very, very frequently performed because it's fun.
Mm-hmm. It's so fun.
They're fun characters. They you don't mind rooting for them to get together.
Yeah.
They don't injure each other.
Especially set against the other main couple in that play, which is a mutual pining trope, which is can get very boring very quickly. And so it adds like a little bit of spice to it, I think.
Well, not only that, but I think that genuinely, I think that the Beatrice and Benedict relationship, I would make an argument, and I don't think I'd have too much, you know, conflict from other people when I say that it's so much more healthy than the relationship. Poor hero. Anyway.
When you have to fake your death, or when you fake your death, something's gone wrong.
Something has gone terribly wrong. We've said it before. Draw on the line. Line in the sand. So despite an arguably martial setting, because you do have, like, it is set against the backdrop of, like, soldiers that have come back from war. Or in the, at rest, essentially. It's gentle. The intrigues are social. And nobody's ruined. And then again, the characters are allowed to grow and develop.
Hero's ruined for a hot second, but...
Not by this plot.
Not by this plot. Correct. That's true. You're right. You're right.
Like I said, I think that their relationship is infinitely more healthy.
Agreed. Yes. Absolutely. For sure.
Relationship in this play.
Yes.
And then, so I also wanted to say that one of my favorite things about this is that it has occurred, and Beatrice and Benedict show up again and again and again in so many other things, and quietly as the side subplot. And one of my favorite couples, and I didn't realize this when I was a kid watching this show, but then I, you know, read Shakespeare, and then I was thinking about this later, and I didn't see this on any lists, but did you ever watch Living Single? Oh my god, it's so good. It's better than Friends. I'm not even going to argue. It's better than Friends. But Living Single has Queen Latifah and a wonderful cast of
love
characters.
She hasn't been doing much lately, but I still love her.
She's on a crime drama.
Oh, she's on a crime.
She's
drama
on a crime
now.
Drama.
Interesting. Okay, she, like, I'll have to look it up.
A sniper, and it's amazing.
Yes, girl. Okay. All right.
She's got like a motorcycle, and she just is driving around being super badass.
All right. Okay.
But anyway, so she's living in the city, and she's a magazine. Runs a magazine, basically.
Okay.
And one of her neighbors, like her, I can't remember if Maxine was a college roommate or something, but she's a lawyer. And one of the guys that is also in the building, Kyle, so he and Max have this exact same dynamic. And they come and grow, like they end up, like, over the seasons, they're obviously giving each other the business. And then ultimately, like, they have like a secret relationship, and then he's going to go off to London or something, and she realizes she's pregnant, and then he comes back and realizes that she's got a kid, and that, you know, she's doing her best. And it's just, their relationship is incredibly sweet. Like, the way that it develops, the way that it ends, and like them as the growth of them as people individually and together is what I think really makes the trope, especially for, in this case, it is the Benedict and Beatrice like vibe. It's wonderful. So I think that it's just so nice to see it stretched out and more, because it's fun vibe. And you feel by the end of it that they're really good friends, and that they're good friends that know each other, not just like fair weather friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then similarly, I think that's the same idea with like Pride and Prejudice, where you start with your prejudices and then you unlearn them, and then you grow as an individual person, but also your relationship evolves and you grow with somebody else. I think trying to go into a relationship thinking I'm going to change this person is a recipe for disaster. Going into a relationship and growing is genuinely the only way that evolution should happen. So that's my, I guess, my advertisement more than anything for this trope, because I think we came at these things from very different angles. I don't really have a lot to go off of from there. I just wanted to talk about, like, let's not be problematic. Let's let it be what it is in the good ways, and then go from there. So
speaking of one enemies to lovers that I was just thinking about, just occurred to me. Have you watched Willow, the movie? Mm-hmm. Mad Mardigan and Sorsha.
Oh, yeah.
Are genuine enemies.
Oh, yeah.
And became lovers. I'm still not clear on why Sorsha fell in love with him. He's kind of a goober, but Genuinely enemies and genuinely become lovers.
She
and didn't without
have a lot of options.
She really didn't. No. Yeah, she was very, very, very ill-treated, in my opinion. But yes, I think that's another enemies to lovers one that was not problematic. We were talking a little bit before about problematic ones like Spike and Buffy.
Yeah, that was the one that we thought would be the safest one to talk about right now, because it's a little bit older and probably nobody in the last 5 to 8 years has been personally victimized for supporting it. And so, like, there are other ones that we don't necessarily fully support, but we're not going to call them out. So,
yeah, for sure.
In that particular ship, you know, Spike as a soulless vampire and Buffy as a vampire slayer, the writers get them together, and they get them together after Buffy has been, you know, traumatized horrifically. And
by multiple former lovers.
Multiple former lovers by being ripped out, by being, you know, resurrected and trying to.
And many enemies, specifically vampires. Like, it's an extremely problematic beginning to a relationship.
Across the board, and it just continues to be worse.
More problematic from there. And then it stops being problematic and just gets kind of sad.
Yeah, it's just like, well, like, it's so weird. And I just don't think that the writers necessarily knew what they were doing.
I think it was meant to be problematic the entire time. I think that they knew on some level that this was bad, but I don't know that it was that they always realized always framed appropriately is a good way to put it. Yeah, for sure.
So just again, your mileage may vary.
Considering don't read something that's gonna cause you anguish. Yeah,
don't do that. Again, if you're interested in dipping your toe into the trope Pride and Prejudice, Much Ado About Nothing, they're wonderful examples of this trope done well and in general good characterization.
Here's a potentially fraught discussion. What is your favorite Pride and Prejudice adaptation for us to recommend to our listeners?
Oh, that's, is that a discussion? Is that a discussion?
There is. Because there's like the 83, the 95, and the 05, I think, are the big ones.
Colin Firth.
Okay, so you're wrong, but it's fine.
I disagree.
Matthew McFadden, come on.
Okay, no, we have so many marathons we have to do.
We do. We'll do one of our next adaptation ones. We'll do the book and then we'll watch all three of the famous adaptations. We'll do it. Yeah. All right.
We can we can do it after our Fast and Furious marathon.
Perfect.
Oh my god, that's
all right. Let's jump into
tell me
Mary
you got
Sue.
Five pages of notes, Annie.
Let me see. 1, 2, 3. I'm sorry. I exaggerated. I have 3 pages.
Okay. I only had 2 pages of those in my little Word document.
All right. So Mary Sue actually has been getting a lot of ink spilled on it recently. So I wanted to do a quick explainer. This is something that's come up a lot, especially in movies, because there have been a lot of accusations of a Mary Sue in a lot of very big franchises.
I argue with Alex and Ray on this. I will go toe-to-toe for Ray
as a Mary Sue or as not a Mary Sue?
As not a Mary Sue.
Okay.
Or at least not as a Mary Sue unless Luke was also a Mary Sue.
Well, so Ray was a big one. Ray was Ray from Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Toriel from The Hobbit, Bella from Twilight in both the books and the movies. People look at that and say, oh, it's a Mary Sue. But a lot of people also say, hey, what's a Mary Sue? And this is actually a conversation that I've had with some people. It's like, oh, that person's a Mary Sue. And I'm like, is it? And they're like, can we talk about what the Mary Sue is? Because in that context, it seems to mean just, you know, a female main character that doesn't seem super interesting to whoever's watching it. But that other characters seem to obsess over. Which, you know, sure. Sometimes there are scenes where Ray may not seem interesting to certain audiences, which is whatever. But basically, one of the things that they all have in common is that people who meet them seem to either immediately fall in love with them or say something like, oh my god, she's so special. And this is almost always women, but it doesn't have to be. And we'll get into kind of the edges of this later. Yeah. But they don't seem to have a ton of interesting personalities. This is like the meme of Bella from Twilight. This is a little bit old, but like that she never has any expressions on her face. She never actually does anything except stand there and get, you know, hurt all the time. And the main argument is that, you know, they don't have anything to back up that everyone is so obsessed with them. There's no substance there to actually latch on to. But it's actually really interestingly gone through an evolution. And so I dug into the history of the Mary Sue a little bit. I'm sure you did too on some of your initial research. In the very earliest iterations, a Mary Sue only appeared in fanfic. It was a literal Mary Sue character. This was an actual character in a fanfic. It was a Star Trek fanfiction. And it specifically was a wish fulfillment self-insert.
The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai.
Okay. That's it.
I just wanted to say that because...
I don't know what that means.
You haven't seen that movie?
It's a movie. Okay. Oh, I've seen Flash Gordon.
How is... your husband not shown you this. Okay. He is
He often asks me how I haven't seen everything.
Gary Stu. So continue. But okay, it is right. It is this version of the character, which is the okay. Mary Sue, it's that he's that.
Okay. So basically, it's, again, a wish fulfillment self-insert. There was a literal Mary Sue character. She was a satirical character. I misspelled satirical. I spelled it like icicle, but like with a satire. Anyway. It was a parody of a common thing that a lot of young writers were doing at the time, where they would take an established story and just throw themselves into it. Not everyone goes through this phase in their writing. A lot of the articles about this and a lot of the deep dives into it were like saying, oh, everyone goes through this in their writing. I wouldn't say everyone goes through it, but it's definitely very, very common. There's a really common trope about the Aragorn Legolas fanfics where there's like a rite of passage that a lot of people talk about when they were first writing fanfic, that they all wrote basically the same fanfic where they traveled to
Middle Earth
and Aragorn and Legolas fell in love with them. And I'm like, that seems like... If 20 people did that, that seems like a lot.
Oh, no, it happened.
I didn't go do that in my fanfic writing, but I absolutely understand it. Mine was The Chronicles of Narnia. So if everyone could just
back up. That's fair. I didn't. You know, it's so fascinating. I didn't. When I was a kid, I didn't want to go on adventures.
Oh, I read so about did.
Other people going on adventures. It's only as I've gotten older that I have relaxed about, like, appreciating the world, that like now I'm like, okay, I get, I've watched all of like the tropey anime that's based on this, basically.
Oh yeah,
so tell me more, Annie. Tell me more.
Well, Kaylee, if you've spent any time on the internet,
boy, have I.
you can probably guess what I'm gonna say next. The trolls ruined it. You might notice that most of the characters that we've kind of been talking about, Rey from Star Wars, Tauriel from The Hobbit, Bella from Twilight, and their authors, in fact, a lot of people kind of point to Kathryn Kennedy. People point to Kathryn Kennedy's influence in Rey and Philippa, I don't remember her last name, who was working on The Hobbit, and of course, Stephanie Meyer, who wrote Bella and Twilight. A lot of these characters and authors are female, and especially young women, specifically for the characters. And if you're new here, young women on the internet tend to get a lot of hate. Just look at the Swifties. I actually wrote this back in December when the Swifties were going after Ticketmaster, and they were getting hate on the internet for going after Ticketmaster. And I was like, why?
You're rooting what for are you... this corporation that's charging $40,000?
Yeah. Sure, who, okay. Who saw this fight and was like, oh, yes, I'm on the side of Ticketmaster. Anyway, if you don't know about that, you can look it up on the internet. We're not going to go into that saga. But you might also have noticed that a lot of the characters that I mentioned suffer from kind of poor characterization. I will say, and you're right, I think that Luke doesn't have the greatest characterization in A New Hope. Rey doesn't have the greatest characterization in The Force Awakens. You're just kind of thrown in and people are just obsessed with her. Same thing with Tauriel. She has one scene where she fights good. And then after that, it's like everyone who meets her is falling over themselves. And same with Bella. She suffers from poor characterization. She is also the narrator of the story. So she's kind of dealing with everyone else's characterization. She doesn't do that much because she's narrating what everyone else is doing. Mm. So
it's also consider the different approaches for Bella specifically, because like, I don't necessarily think in the other, you know, pieces of media that you brought out.
Yeah.
That it was done this way, but Stephanie Meyer, I'm pretty sure, wrote her as the blank slate to be projected onto specifically, which is just an interesting difference in how her character was written.
Also, if you read the physical description of Bella and then look at an actual picture of Stephanie Meyer, you can kind of see a little bit of the self-insert trope there, too. Not that that's necessarily bad. I mean, write what you know, you know what I mean? And it's not like, you know, brunette pale women are rare in the United States either. Like, yes, Kaylee just pointed at me as a brunette pale woman.
don't go to Washington, Annie.
But again, like, this isn't a crime, you know. A lot of writers or, you know, characters, like, you can get kind of bland sometimes. Like, that's not a bad thing. And a lot of new writers, as they will readily tell you when they write for the first time, it kind of sucks. Like, yep. It's not great. So a lot of these fanfics that we're talking about, not like the big ones that ended up as multi-million dollar movies, but the fanfics specifically, like, they weren't awesome. And that's
fine.
Reasonable. Well, I wouldn't say it's fine because I don't like reading things that are bad. Well, but also, it's not a crime. You don't arrest people and throw them into jail for...
You don't have to read things. You can't also, stop
you could
reading.
Also choose to move on. But this trolley internet cohort basically started posting in the forums calling this kind of thing out. They're commenting on these stories and writing posts, basically bullying these almost entirely young female writers, and they're calling their characters shit, which isn't a nice thing to do.
Nope.
Rude. But they started using Mary Sue, and it's kind of, they kind of evolved the trope, meaning they started using Mary Sue to mean just a female character that I don't like. And that's kind of where we start on this path of the way that Mary Sue is used now. And they kind of turned it into this stance, this kind of dog whistle to say that, you know, I don't like this character and therefore you have written poorly. And that's so strange.
It's weird.
If you don't like something, that doesn't mean that the person who wrote it, again, deserves to go to jail. That's kind of silly. There was some calling out of male protagonists like this, as Kaylee was saying earlier. They call them a Gary Stew. I put that in quotes because I thought it was very funny. But it's not nearly on the same scale that trolls were kind of calling out women.
No, because men are the default, Annie. I was being heavily sarcastic, and I apologize. I just want to make sure, disclaimer applied.
I've died and my soul has left my body.
Insanely frustrating because, again, I do actually argue about this because, you know, Alex is reasonably frustrated with the story.
Sure. And he's just kind of taking it out on,
exactly.
On that one character that he can more, like, effusively dislike.
She's the main character
sure,
in the series.
She is, absolutely. And I totally understand that. But you can also just dislike something without saying that something is a Mary Sue and putting a value judgment on that for all of the characters in general. And I do want to issue a little bit of a disclaimer, more, I don't want to call it legitimate, but in the large format, media critics like magazines and stuff have actually adopted this term, but they're not really using it in the same way that we kind of define it outside of those spaces. So I'm not accusing every movie reviewer of being a troll asshole for saying Mary Sue. And I don't want it to sound like I'm saying every movie reviewer is a misogynist, but there's definitely a different feeling between the cultural discussion of whether a character design is any good and just being a bully and trying to bully a young woman on the internet because you just don't like her writing. And that's something that you open yourself up to when you put your writing out there. But also, you know, there's still a difference, I think, between calling out a character for being maybe not as fleshed out as it could be and bullying a writer.
Constructive criticism, which is not always welcome,
sure,
is very different even then from harassment.
Agreed. Today, as a response to kind of all of that, there's been a little bit of a reclamation movement to take the label and bring it back and give it some power for specifically the young female writers who are talking about it. People point out that men with poor characterization and weak plotting often go unremarked on. So a lot of times if you see a Mary Sue sort of comment somewhere, you'll see, you know, someone coming in and defending and saying, hey, what about this other character that you have said that you loved? And not that you need to not love them, but let's take a second and think about why you're specifically mad at this character, and perhaps it is their gender or the gender of the author that wrote them that is maybe a part of it. And I also wrote about Luke Skywalker in my notes. He comes out of nowhere. He's a super great pilot / Jedi / strategist and makes a career criminal, a monk, and an evil general suddenly get obsessed with him. Very similar to Rey.
Yeah, no, like I said, I've had this.
Kaylee just rolled her eyes so hard. I'm surprised no one heard it.
Discussion with my husband, and it is just, it's good that we have each other.
We had
back,
the, yeah, I actually, else. Kaylee and I didn't talk about this before I wrote these notes. This is completely
organic, organic. Look, I just, it's
hard because again, it feels so sexist once you see the pattern and
Alex doesn't hard. Think that.
Right. No one wants to think of themselves as sexist. Yeah. It's hard to just be like, oh, I'm just, you know, talking about a thing that I enjoy, which is this, you know, talking about these movies. And I don't want to like critically examine all of the individual psychological reasons that
which
I'm having.
I get.
Totally sure. Reasonable, but also still probably a thing that we all need to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something that we, as people that are impacted by Western culture, have to.
Right.
And I just want to be clear. When I was like, you know, 14, 15, I was a not like other girls. Like, I had that moment. I never really like went ham on it. But like, I had that quiet internalized misogyny. And I like tried to dodge Mary Sue's in fan fiction and stuff.
Right.
Just because I thought it was stupid. And I thought it was a waste of time. I never like went out and went after anybody for it. It just wasn't. I never gave it a chance because it wasn't like. I just didn't think it was.
You saw this discourse out there.
Yeah.
And you were like, I don't want to be the subject of that.
I don't want to be like part of the problem. And I didn't realize that I already was there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
We all have to unlearn some of the cultural expectations that we're grown up exposed to. And that's not this is not a commentary on any of our parents. This is simply a commentary on the societal structure that we've got. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it does take work. You have to work on yourself. You have to grow. You have to become more than you are when you are a child. Like, that's the point of growing up, is that you learn and you adjust your actions based on experiences. And I like to think that, you know, I mean, maybe it's not the same for you, but I like to think I'm a much kinder commenter now on other people's work. I don't know if you are as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I, in general, like being just more thoughtful as I approach consuming any media, whether that's like fan fiction or books, TV, movies, just being more thoughtful about like how I'm responding and why I'm responding in a certain way has really helped me not be a dick.
It's hard to not be a dick sometimes, isn't it?
When you're, again, when it's something that you've internalized and you don't necessarily even know, because like, it's like learning a language. It's like learning your birth language.
Yeah.
You don't know the rules. I couldn't name off some of the more obscure grammar rules for English, like the word ordering for like a sentence. Like I broke that's like a post that was broken down. Like, if you're describing something, there's a certain order that
you put the adjectives in. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That I was, yeah, this is right. I do it, but I couldn't have told you that before. I mean, it's just something that you have in your head, something that you have to unpick, basically, unstitch.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
And part of that kind of reclamation has been there is a movement of people proudly using the term Mary Sue. You see this a little bit more in kind of the cozy genres, but there is a nerd culture news site called The Mary Sue. We've talked about it a little bit on the podcast before. They were the source of one of our lists for books by trans authors that you can check out on our bookshop page. But they do a ton of great work. And it's not all, but much from the perspective of a, you know, non-white, non-cis, non-het dude. Like, it's from people who are not part of that big movie review culture. They're part of women or non-binary or trans or people of color or other marginalized groups. And they try and make a point to not be part of that, you know, trolly thing, but they want to be thoughtful and they want to say, hey, maybe we can take a second look at this, which I always find super valuable. And so, again, to reiterate, kind of to, I guess, close this out, people usually say Mary Sue when they mean, again, female character, one I don't particularly like. And let's be real, you're allowed to not like characters. That's totally fair. But you're also allowed to just say, I don't like that character. You don't have to call it a Mary Sue. You don't have to like lump it in with this like really weirdly misogynist phrase. For example, and I have this in here and I might, you know, piss some people off here, but I did not particularly like the Captain Marvel movie or the character. She just didn't resonate with me. But I'm not going to go out and bully anybody about it. Mm-hmm. And that's my main point here.
That's super fair. Can I also, and I keep this in or don't, I don't care, but I think it's fascinating the way that you found and conceptualized the Mary Sue, which is that it's a person who stands around and doesn't necessarily do a lot to justify their existence in the content.
Right.
And is just beloved across the land. When I first came across the term, and it was in fan fiction, because, you know, of course it was. Like you said, it
Yeah, at the beginning there. It all was, yeah.
It was an overpowered female character who was not only beautiful, but also was special in all of the ways.
Yes, at the very beginning, I kind of glossed over that, but initially the first Mary Sues were overpowered, but like in a super special way that no one else ever was. And it was like that they were like, you know, part of a dead race and they were the last ones. And especially they had like all these extra powers that no one else had. But even then, like, there's like, it's like, what are you?
It was like all of this saying, like, every.
And they had enormous boobs. I'm like, yeah. It was ridiculous.
So I just think that's so interesting about like, and technically still true, because like Jupiter Jones from Jupiter Ascending, she is a Mary Sue, in my opinion, but it's a fun movie. It's Transformers, but for girls.
Sure.
Like, that's...
I like Transformers.
That's what those... Like, I mean,
I'm a girl.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the movie. I'm sorry.
That's fair.
I'm giving... This is the only commentary I have.
Jupiter Ascending?
There's Jupiter, perhaps, and it might go places.
Bonkers. I cannot express enough. It's fun. Anyway, it's... But so many different things. Like,
just sure, yeah.
Special person, and...
Yeah.
Just because of who she is, gets whisked off to space... utopia, mm-hmm. but it's not space utopia,
and she's the only one who can save it.
She has to do certain things to not the world is gonna go down otherwise, probably. Not the universe, but the world, for sure.
She and her big boobs and singularly beautiful Mila face Kunis, don't
her boobs
do
aren't
something
quite that big.
Right. I'm sorry I was still stuck in the old face.
Did you ever watch Samurai Champloo?
Samurai Champloo.
Champloo.
Champloo. No.
It's an anime. It's very good. You should watch it.
It sounds like an anime. It actually sounds like an Etsy store, but...
It was that's fair. it's the samurai show that the Cowboy Bebop teamed in.
Okay.
And the reason I just brought this up is because it's genuinely one of my favorite scenes anywhere. So there's three main characters. There's a samurai.
Okay.
A roving... thug, mercenary. So those two are like enemies, but they're just like reluctantly
together
in Fu's service. Yeah. And then Fu is a girl who's searching for her father, who is a samurai that she's trying to find.
Okay.
So in one of the early episodes, Fu has to run somewhere, and like there's like this whole nonsense happening, and like she has the running sequence, and it's like the show is otherwise such high quality, so good, you never see any issues.
Okay.
And then you see like the boobs weirdly bouncing back and forth, and they're weird, and they're doing like this, like, and you guys can't see it, it's like alternate hand motions going up and down, which is not...
Kaylee looks like she's milking a cow right now.
That's what it looks like. And then she reaches in and she pulls out two bombs. Perfect.
They make you watch that with your own two eyes.
It was hilarious. And it was perfect. Anyway, I just thought of that. And you can probably find that clip.
Okay.
All right. But it's also, that is a wonder. It's very good. And it will make you cry.
Okay.
The storytelling in that and the art is good. The music's fantastic. So mm-hmm. I super recommend it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Do you have a Kaylee coda for us this week, Kaylee?
Kind of mentioned this before, but like, I just love characters. And so like, I'm so glad that I let go of my, or at least I've started letting go, I should say, of my preconceptions and prejudices for people just having a good time. And if something twigs me, like, I'm glad that I've started trying to figure out why. Because I never reach out and like judge people. Like, I try not to reach out and like be rude to anybody, but like, why didn't I like the thing? Like, is this a me thing? Is this a somebody else thing? Or is this just like not my cup of tea or whatever? I'm so grateful. I've gotten so much more joy in life being less internally judgmental on myself. Because that's what it was at the end of the day. It was me judging me, not me doing anything to anyone else. And I think that letting go of your preconceptions. Even if all you do is walk away from something that you don't like, if that's the first step on your journey, then that's fine. It's still a step in the right direction. Like, you don't have to build the wall in a day, or disassemble the wall in a day is probably a more appropriate metaphor. You can just stop thrusting bricks into the mortar. That's what I got. Try and make sense of that later. I'm really sorry.
You say that after every coda, but it's always wonderful. So. Thank you for listening to The Ink Sink. You can find us wherever you scroll, on podcast apps like Spotify, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, and Google Podcast. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook. And if you really want to keep this show on the air, which we would really appreciate, you can support us on Spotify or Ko-fi for as low as $1 a month. All supporters will receive access to our exclusive Discord server. So hop on that if you want to talk to us about what you're reading or what you're not reading, and send us all of your pet pictures. We really appreciate it. Thank you for listening to The Ink Sink. You can find all of the links that I've just talked about on our Linktree, which is wherever you found this podcast.